Welcome to On Being Happier, Thinking with Heart and Mind, a podcast emphasizing the heart's role in happiness, in sound decision-making, and in being at our best. Hi, my name is Ron Schneebaum. I'm a physician, work at the outpatient arm of the Children's Hospital at Dartmouth, and serve on the clinical faculty at Dartmouth College's Geisel School of Medicine. I'm convinced that nothing's more important to the human psyche than love. I've worked at thinking with both heart and mind for over 40 years. While intellectual analysis generally carries the banner of thinker, to leave out the heart is to leave out something vital. Language reminds us of the importance of the heart. To do something half-heartedly or to not put our hearts into an activity means we didn't do it well. And to be heartless is not a compliment. We involve our hearts wherever we care the most, where heart and mind work together, we're happier, have richer relationships, and greater practical success. We are fully present and we are fully ourselves. It's the art of living well. Each episode of this podcast presents a different aspect of thinking with heart and mind. Together, I hope they paint a full and broad picture. I developed this podcast to not only describe a lost art, but to also offer challenges and tools that interested listeners can use to incorporate thinking with the heart and mind into all aspects of their lives. The ideas in this podcast are my own, and the stories have been altered to protect privacy. This podcast is not a substitute for medical advice. If you are experiencing significant difficulties, please seek professional help. I thank you for joining me on this venture. My very best and be well, Ron. Episode 11, Attitude and Gratitude with Heart and Mind. A 15-year-old girl came to my office because she wasn't happy with her skin. "Can you fix my acne?" she asked. "Sure," I said. "That's my job." I drew diagrams explaining the causes of acne, showed her how the problem was really below the level of the skin, and I debunked some of the myths about acne, including that cleanliness is the problem. I showed her that the problem was not only below the skin, but then I pointed out if it was related to cleanliness, it would be on soccer players' legs and football players' knees. Using the same diagrams, I mapped out treatment plans showing her how various approaches worked, and then we talked specifically about what she can do for her skin. "Acne lasts several years," I said. "Outside of where you have blemishes, your skin is really quite lovely. It's nicely oiled, it's rich, it's beautiful. When your acne resolves, you'll be happy with your skin, even if you do nothing about it now. You can feel a lot of pressure at your age and think that people judge you by your skin. It's really the same at all ages. We worry that people judge us. While some might, people you care about don't. If you think about it in the reverse way, if any of your friends had your skin, you wouldn't think any less of them. You probably have some friends that even have more significant problems, and that doesn't get in the way of your friendship. So if you don't want to do anything, you don't need to." Later that afternoon, another 15-year-old girl came into my office and she was there for her yearly checkup. I asked her and I asked her parents if they had any questions or concerns. They said no, and I noticed that this girl had very extensive acne across her face. After finishing my exam and talking about other issues, I said to her, "I noticed that you have some problems with acne. Do you care about it? Should we do something about them?" And she said no. I drew the same diagrams, gave her the same explanations, and said nothing you have will cause later scarring. If you'd like to get rid of it, though, call me at any time and we can develop a treatment plan. Several days later, a 14-year-old came in for his yearly physical. And when I asked if they had any questions or concerns, one of his parents said yes. "Could you do something about his acne?" I looked. His skin was really quite nice, except for the places where he had some pimples. And I asked him if he wanted to treat his acne. He said he didn't. I then took that time to talk to the parents about our changing approach when our children become teenagers and how we can't control certain things that we might have been able to control when they were younger. To treat his acne, I also explained, he'd have to apply creams once or twice a day. That would just raise another area of contention and argument, and it's just simply not worth it. We then had an interesting conversation about the changing focus in parenting once children become teenagers. I treated each of these three patients differently. The first girl wanted to treat her acne, and I developed a treatment plan. The second girl, who had more extensive acne, wasn't interested in treating it, so we didn't treat it, though I did give her a pathway to treatment if that's what she later wanted. And in the third case, I completely switched around the topic so that acne wasn't the focus. Parenting teenagers became the topic at hand. Though each of these were different, since I was the one developing these plans, there had to be a unifying factor. And that unifying factor is my overall attitude that I take toward medicine. My goal in all that I do in medicine can be captured in one small phrase. I am interested in the well-being of my patients and their families. Well-being has two sides to it. One side has to do with their physical wellness. For that, I use my mind, I use all my intellectual knowledge that I gained through my training and through my years of experience. I had to call back everything that I learned about the skin, about acne, about its treatment, and about potential side effects, to address who they were as human beings and the relationship between them and how they feel about their skin. There I had to use my heart. My heart gives me the ability to see from another person's perspective. Through its compassion, through its love, and through my interest, I can imagine how another might see a skin problem, even though I never had such skin problems and I was very different from these teenagers. I learned through what I observed in my life, and I also learned through the various conversations as my career developed. The other side of well-being with these teenagers was to help them become comfortable with their skin, so that when they're in their various social situations, they aren't self-conscious. They can simply be themselves. The same sense of well-being that I try to develop and work with in my medical practice, I also work on in my inner life. And just as in my practice, I can achieve this by partnering my heart with my mind and thinking. And this is the case in the practical aspects of my life, in my sense of self, and in my relationships. My first clue about the importance of heart and mind working together in the practical aspects of life occurred when I was in fifth grade, though I certainly didn't think in such terms at the time. I grew up in an apartment complex in Queens, one of the boroughs of New York City, with my sister and my parents. My mother was a school teacher and also ran the household. She was exhausted after a day of teaching, but she made sure that the house was clean. The dishes were all done, food was put away, the floors were swept, and they were washed. She wasn't very interested, however, in the day-to-day appearance of the house. Items were strewn all over, beds weren't made, and in the living room, the couches and chairs were covered with cloth slipcovers. On the rare occasions when company came, everything was different. Everything was put away, the beds were made, beautiful bedspreads were put on them, and the covers came off the couches and chairs. The house looked great. I had a contrasting but similar experience when I went to visit a friend who lived some 10 minutes away. I went to his apartment, but there I was only allowed to wait by the door while he went to get something from his room. I saw that just to the left was their living room, and it was beautiful. The furniture was gorgeous. It looked very expensive. The carpeting was thick and plush, where ours had a very low nap, but his place as well was set up only for company. The chairs and couches in their living room were covered with a thick plastic see-through wrap, and the living room was actually gated off. Children were not allowed in there. I was puzzled. Why do we live in houses that aren't comfortable for ourselves? Why didn't we value our own experience as much as we cared about our company's experience of our house? In my friend's house, I had the impression, as I thought about it later, that it really was set up as a museum. It was a place of show. It was a place to show off to friends. In my own house, I had the sense that it wasn't worth the work that it would take to have our house shine so that we could also enjoy the nice things that we had. These childhood memories and my thoughts about them paralleled my approach to these teenagers with their acne. They each came in with ideas about what they wanted to do with their skin. The first girl wanted to be blemish-free, and the second girl didn't care. With each of them, however, I offered an opposing thought to give them something to think about so within that space they could potentially discover what they really felt and act in a way that matched that. How they chose wasn't my affair. My job was to support them. I took the tack that I did with the last boy because I was impressed that the more his parents were involved with his looks, the harder it would be later on for him to free himself from their opinion and find what he wanted to do. We have the same opportunity in everything we do, whether it's decorating our houses, how we keep up with them, or whether it's choosing what we wear. The material things we'd like to have sometimes inspire us to work harder or to get an advanced degree. There's nothing the matter with enjoying what we have. The only problem is when we make it a definition of who we are, or if we underserve ourselves, if we think we're not worthy of more. By balancing heart with mind, we follow our passions and we follow our interests, while at the same time we look to see that what we're indeed following are our interests and not those of others. Now, life is more complicated than this. Certainly there's a blend, but we take the thoughts of others into account when we do what we do. But primarily, it's to see that we go after our interests and are comfortable in our interests and that our interests are ours. And we can find this when our hearts and minds are in agreement. It feels right in every way. Heart and mind working together can also help us in developing our sense of self. In episode 8, The Psychology of Heart and Mind, we began to look at how it is that old wounds of the past can affect the present. In the episode on forgiveness, we looked at how we can start to heal some hurts. Here, we'll look at this on a moment-to-moment, day-to-day basis. Suppose we extend ourselves. We apply to a school, we interview for a job, or we ask our bosses for a raise. And in these settings, imagine that we don't get it. If we work with intellect alone, intellect can only judge us, can only know good or bad. Besides feeling our current sense of upset, the mind commonly brings to the fore all the similar hurts that have ever happened in our whole life, and these are as alive in the moment as the one that's bothering us now. Sometimes, when we get rejected, the mind takes an opposite tack. We can feel that we were wronged, that the people that didn't give us the job, the people that didn't give us the raise, are the ones who are at fault. We deserve better, and we can walk around being angry. Our heart here can rescue us, and it begins the rescuing process in several ways. As our best friend, and as we would with a best friend, we'd say, okay, take whatever time you need to take to recover from this. Now, as we start to recover, let's first see what we can learn from this situation. If something like this turns up again, we'll be more prepared. We could have learned more about the company we were applying to, for example. Had we known a little bit more, we could have sounded that much sharper during our interview. We might realize they were not good about speaking up on our own behalf, clearly stating our skills and abilities. We could also discover that the budgeting season had just ended the month before. Had we applied sooner, we might have gotten that raise. Once we finish and learn what we can, then we can close the door. This is very different than the Aesop's fable of the fox and the grapes, where a fox tries to grab a bunch of grapes that are out of reach and finally walks away saying, "Ah, I didn't want those grapes anyway." No. Here, we're working with our hearts, so once we heal, the love that we have within us shines and we feel whole and we feel together. The next step that our heart says to us is, let's take stock of where we are, because there's nothing better for us to do than to appreciate where we are, to know that we're okay where we are, to accept where we are, to know that we can take our next step forward from where we are. This way we get centered, we're in the present, and if we trust our lives, we're back to feeling that we're in the exact right spot. There's an old saying that when one door closes, another one opens. This has happened so many times in my life that I can't help but know that it's true. So once we're in this spot, we can think about what we want to do next. We might decide that we like the company enough so that we'll stick around and ask for our raise again the next year. We might come to see that we're in a department that has very little growth, and that if we want to stay with the company and grow, that we need to move to another department. Or we might come to appreciate that they really don't respect our abilities and that it's time to move on. Sometimes these changes can bring unexpected benefits. Now, let's look at it a little bit differently. Let's imagine that we did get into that school that we hoped for, we did get that job, and we did get that raise. Here, the other trap we can fall into is thinking that we're better than somebody else because we have a higher position than they might have. We might be a bigger wage earner, we might have a more powerful position, and there, our heart helps us to appreciate that no, that what we have is a way to achieve certain ends, but it doesn't define who we are. We are no better than anybody else because of our position. And that's not theoretical, that's absolutely true. Once we realize that, we can lean into our hearts in our relationships. We can appreciate those around us as much as we appreciate ourselves. When we start to think with our hearts, we not only want to make life good for the people in our family and our friends and those we love, but we also want to help those we work with and all the people that we see in our various relationships. Helping them means recognizing them, acknowledging them, being with them, supporting them, listening to them, whatever it takes in whatever situation we're in. When we do that, when our hearts meet the heart of another, we feel joyful because in order to be in that state, love joins us. It's love that connects us to others. We create the position that allows love to flow between us and to fill us. When we're centered in heart and in mind, we can enjoy our outer successes, the material objects we like, and we can have deep and rich relationships. And in the center of all that is our sense of self, which becomes filled with and steeped in love as the mind recognizes the heart and sees it as an equal and valued partner. The episode's full title is Attitude and Gratitude with Heart and Mind. So a word about gratitude. It's been my experience that wherever I feel connected with my heart, I feel gratitude. The heart is the seat of gratitude because through the heart, we appreciate that everything that we have is a gift. And that also helps our hearts glow because we realize that to receive a gift in some very deep way, we're recognized and we're loved. I developed this podcast to not only share what I've learned about thinking with heart and mind, but to also offer interested listeners tools to use to put these ideas into practice. With each episode, therefore, I have several exercises. For this one, there are two, and each one of them has two parts. The first is to go through all the settings and situations of your life and consider your underlying attitude that you have in that setting and situation. Be as specific as you can as you look at these situations to consider the different people, the different challenges, the different chores, your attitude throughout the day. At the same time, consider the attitude that you would like to have in each of these settings and situations. As you do this exercise, you might come across reasons for not having the attitude that you would like, and these might have to do with past hurts. If that's the case, you might find that doing this exercise with a friend or with a trained mental health professional might be helpful. As our hearts become involved in our thinking, and as we become clear about the attitude we'd like to have in each of these situations, with time and with work, that's how we will be. It is impossible for it to be any other way. The second exercise is to look at the question of gratefulness. Is the statement that I made about gratefulness being connected to the heart true. Explore that idea and see whether or not you agree. One way I imagine it is by picturing somebody who might be called miserly or stingy or somebody who feels deserving, and contrast that with someone who feels overwhelmingly thankful and grateful and joyful. The second part of this exercise is something that I ask all listeners to do once. Think about an object you own that's been manufactured. It could be the clothing you're wearing, the computer or tablet or laptop you're listening to this podcast on, or the vehicle that you use. Think about all those who contributed to getting this to you. Start with those who packaged it and delivered it, and then work backwards. Think of all the people in the various factories and all the people who supported all the factory workers and all the people who supported them, and go on and on. The feeling to develop out of this is that what we have is a gift, and we receive this gift because of the work of so, so many. The feeling to be generated out of this is one of thankfulness, and along with that comes a feeling of wanting to pay back, wanting to do your share. As you develop this feeling of wanting to pay back, realize that how you pay this back can be in very different ways. It could be trying to work through the concepts of this podcast is your way of giving back, trying to change the world into a kinder, nicer, fairer, gentler place. It could be that it's what you do for a living, or it's raising your children to be those people who contribute to the world, or playing guitar at a small nightclub that people go to and that inspires them and allows them to go out and do their stuff. See that we're all connected through an amazing web of life, and this alone can give us a remarkable feeling of gratefulness for all that's around. To help with these exercises, I list them in the show notes. That way you can read them, you can even download them. The show notes can be found at the Apple Podcast homepage or at the Spotify Podcast homepage. They also can be found at this podcast website at ronschneebaummd.com. Below the show notes, I have several quotations about attitude and gratitude. I find them to be inspiring. I hope you enjoy them as well. In addition, at the podcast homepage, which can also be found by searching onbeinghappier.com. If you look for On Being Happier in this way, it must be one word. There you'll find a picture with the words attitude and gratitude with heart and mind. There's a small size and a larger size. The small size can be downloaded and used as wallpaper for your phone. The larger size can be downloaded and used as a screensaver for your tablet or laptop. I find that having a picture with the words in front of me of something that I'm working on is very helpful. I plan on posting this podcast on the 1st and 15th of each month. This episode took much longer. It took the entire month. When I put these together, I start with my basic idea. I then find stories that I think fit, and then I work them till they fit the right way. It's almost like doing a jigsaw puzzle. Sometimes it takes much longer than I ever imagined, and that's what happened with this one. Besides developing the ideas in the podcast, I also create the pictures that I use, and I edit the recording. And I do all this in every spare moment outside my regular full-time job as a pediatrician. The idea that full human thinking balances a well-developed intellect with a compassionate and caring heart is an idea that's too important to not spread. I offer these podcasts as a gift. I receive no monetary payback. I'm not interested in receiving monetary payback. I'm happy to take on all of its costs. I only ask that if you like this podcast, share it. Share it with friends, share it with colleagues, share it with family members, share it with spiritual leaders, share it with anyone who you think would be interested. Because of your sharing, this podcast is already heard literally worldwide and in almost every state of the United States. I couldn't be more grateful. If you're streaming podcasts and you listen to this one, take some time before you jump to the next one. This gap between podcasts can be used to take these ideas and turn them into tools that you can use in the rest of your life. If you have any questions about the content or about the exercises, please email me. You can email me at ron@ronschneibaummd.com or at ron@onbeinghappier.com. Just write in the subject line questions. If you have any comments about this podcast or about ideas for future podcasts, do the same and write comments in the subject line. If you're interested in receiving a newsletter, and I hope to get these out every month and a half or 2 months, also email me and write newsletter in the subject line. I enjoy the time we spend together with this podcast, and I hope you find it useful. Until the next time, my very best, and be well, Ron.